This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasudhi, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with me. Welcome, George.
Good afternoon. Welcome indeed. What a lovely day.
It is a lovely day, but you know, the whole topic that you know you wanted to discuss today, George, sort of got my heart really...
Oh, don't be like that.
Broken, you know, throughout. The more and more I read, the more and more, you know, heartbroken I was.
There are many things in life that can be heartbreaking, but you can always see the warm side of things as well.
There is, but you know, and I think the heartbreaking is actually coming due to the fact that you are torn between... two issues.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, one side of you says you should be going for this, the other side says no. You know, morally, this is not right.
I love it when I tear you apart like that. You do. That's right. So therefore, I always choose topics that is controversial, create a lot of discussion.
Not controversial, really, but I suppose it will open up, you know, a lot of people to think about.
Let's see whether we can open up many listeners calling in to tell us their feeling towards whether this is right or wrong.
That's right. Okay, so what are we talking about? There was a report recently in the UK, just in the week, am I correct?
That's right. It was 16th of August, it was published.
It was a High Court ruling where the judge had sanctioned the sterilisation of a man in his best interest. And this is a landmark ruling. The reason it's a landmark ruling is because it's the first time it's been sanctioned on a man. It has been done in women before, but not
in... Is that right? I didn't know that it was sanctioned on a women before.
It has. Enforced sterilisations of people with learning disabilities has been a common practice in the UK in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. It stopped, but this is another case that has come up. Now, why don't you just give us the details, George? Go ahead.
Right, essentially, 36-year-old man called DE, named by the court clearly, using his initials from the Midlands, actually had learning difficulties and already has a son and born in 2010 with his girlfriend. Essentially, what's the problem here? Is that he has learning difficulties, and then the experts feels that he's capable of making sexual consent, but did not have the capacity of actually making decisions about contraceptions. Mm-hmm. So what it boils down to is learning difficulties. A gentleman having a girlfriend who actually have similar problems but less severe, and they're very happy together. They have a child already, and the court suddenly decided that because in the best interest of DE, the man, and then if he has another child, this will be psychologically too distressed. So the decisions to make a vasectomy mm-hmm. on him was imposed by court, and then that was the issues here.
Yeah, the justice Eleanor King. It was a woman actually.
Of course, that's why I have a bit of issue to pick here. That's right.
She ruled that a vasectomy could take place after could cause the man psychological harm. Mm. You know, in my mind, all of this is so subjective, George.
The whole thing is very subjective.
Yeah, it is. You know?
It's what you hear, that's presented to court that is very subjective. And in fact, one of the things that actually was, all these subjective things is that, what it was described in court was that, the birth of the couple's first child had a profound effect on both family. Mm-hmm. Any birth on any child in any family will have profound effect on the family.
No, but it was more this side because the family had to look after, because both parents were not in the best of
that. And then so suddenly...
So the burden sort of fell back on the family, and it was a joint decision. It was the family, the council workers, the social workers who all decided to bring this up and get a court decision.
Yeah, but if you think about it, like you said, it's open to arguments. Like, in a non-learning disability family, the issues that sometimes the child care has to be transferred to grandparents, So there are issues to discuss here. I mean, the reason why I'm particularly interested in this issue is because about 3 years ago, I brought a case in the discussion table here.
Yes.
For an Australian woman who wrote to me, do you remember?
Yes, okay. I do.
The Australian woman who actually is the mother of child, just like DE, has a bit of learning difficulties, essentially applied to court to ask for the child, or the child, I mean, he was 25, to have a vasectomy. Incredibly good-looking gentleman. Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing is that when you speak to him, then you realise that there are issues about learning disabilities. Mm-hmm. So when the court decided not to agree to a vasectomy, this woman actually wrote to numerous urologists across the world in order to find out. So I agreed to see the child, and then in the clinic, essentially what I did was that I asked some questions, and then I felt that, you know, the questions that was asked to the gentleman who I treated was that, you know, previously was that, do you think you're ready to be a father? Mm-hmm. And he said no. But the question I asked was that, do you think you'll be a good father and actually become a proud father if you choose to be one? And he also said, maybe. Mm-hmm. So that actually, you know, to some degree, put some doubt in my mind that, you know, we should not decide for him whether he's good father or not good father. So I decided that I wasn't in a position to do a vasectomy for this guy.
Right. But, you know, when you talk about legislation, does Malaysia have any legislation allowing vasectomy for people with, you know, disabilities?
Well, actually, you know, I think sufferers of disability, you know, learning disabilities, essentially we need to actually assess the insight whether the person to make the patient.
Really?
Yes. You know, like for example, somebody with learning disability comes in with appendicitis, and then the doctors may be able to get consent to do this procedure without, may be able to do the procedure without consent because it's in the best interest for survival of this person. Whenever it comes to situation where it is not life threatening and then it is difficult, then we may be into a bit of a kind of like a, you know, legal conundrum and little bit of dilemma, and therefore the court usually is invited to make decision on behalf of doctors or to help to make decisions.
Even here in Malaysia?
I would think so.
Really?
Yes, definitely.
Have you heard of any case?
Well, actually not necessarily come to vasectomy, because first of all, vasectomy is all very, very popular, kind of like a, you know, contraception, methods of contraception in the general public anyway. And most likely in a kind of like a Malaysian setting, you probably will be the girls who actually get sterilized, you know, in addition.
Which most of the time it is. And you know what? Lutz has just texted in to say his partner could have had her tubes tied unless he's a strange sort of character.
Oh, yes. That's right. So this is it. You know, the court, you know, Judge Elena has opened up the floodgate to actually say, if you are not quite normal, basically with the court decision, maybe this opened up the floodgate to actually say that straying partners may even go for the snip. Yes. So exactly. So this is when we want the listeners in Klang Valley. The Klang Valley has to call in to say, do you think this is right, or do you think the court has a decision to make to actually say that there may be a profound psychological disadvantage that this man actually end up having, you know, another child.
Yeah, I mean, do you think sterilization laws should be the same for all, regardless of their disability or not?
I will feel very uncomfortable if I were the doctor actually being instructed to do a vasectomy on this man.
But in this case, you wouldn't have a choice anymore, George, because it's a court ruling.
Well, the court will rule to say that it is allowed. Mm. And is a doctor willing to do it? See, the doctor may be allowed to do it, you may choose not to do it.
Oh, you can still go against
that. Well, I hope so. Right? Because court actually ask me to do this, I will find it incredibly difficult to actually do it myself.
Really?
Yeah.
You
even
sure?
Though it's a small operation.
You have a bit of a conscience, don't you?
I do.
Okay. That's
you know, I know you find it quite difficult to believe.
Very hard to believe, really. Hi, Yong. How are you today?
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, doctor. Yeah, interesting subject.
Very interesting indeed.
You saying disability, are you talking about physical, mental?
Or it was a learning disability.
Mm-hmm.
Mental, huh?
Yes.
That's right.
So
nothing to do with physical and all that.
No.
That's right. I mean, well, it is interesting things that you open up. You know, does that mean that, you know, certain, you know, physical disability, you know, has a court the decision to actually say that just because you have a physical disability, you may not be a good enough parents, or this might cause you too much distress? So that's an interesting viewpoint to look at too.
Yeah. Well, I have a very, just a couple of days ago, I attended this, have you heard of Nick, what's his name?
Vujicic, yes.
Oh, wow. Vujicic, no, yes. I'm very jealous. Yeah. I'm very jealous of you, because the moment I found out, it was Wednesday already. So I was really, really heartbroken to know that it was Tuesday that you attended that.
Well, to let you know, Nick Vujicic will be in to do a show with Frida next Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
The 27th of September. Okay,
so
August. So you
look
wanna
at him. He's just got a baby.
Yep.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I totally disagree.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so basically, you know, this is, do you think this may open up floodgate for, you know, the court to intervene on somebody who may have disability, somebody may have learning disability?
The problem,
you know,
with the trend now, everything is the court, even dragging God to court.
Mm, yes, okay.
Well, we shan't go there.
Yeah, right? We shall not go there. But thank you for calling.
I mean, everything is the court.
That's right. You know, maybe politically too correct.
Yes.
So I don't agree.
Okay, thank you very much for your view. That's right.
LTY, how are you today?
Fine, thank you. And how are you, Mira?
Very well, thank you.
And how are Dr. Georgie?
Dr. George is fantastically. Both of us in absolute high spirit because we've got another holiday coming up next week,
good,
right?
Good, and let's enjoy your holiday.
Absolutely.
Now, come back to the question.
Yes.
I think this is nearly a violation of human rights.
Mm-hmm.
The right to procreate for everyone. Why must we discriminate against the lesser one? That is not right.
It isn't.
I hope more listeners will call in and fight for this basic right to procreate. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, actually, you know, it's interesting that, you know, LTY came up with this to actually say this is human right, because for many, many years in many, many countries, it has always been rejected. The similar proposal was put forward in 1999 and has always been rejected to actually say that this is a human right and there's no intervention that is required.
Are you sure? Where is this? In the UK?
Yeah, in the UK report from BBC to actually stated that, you know, in 1999, such case was actually declined by the court and actually felt that it was a violation of human rights. And then at the end of the day, you know, it hasn't really been another application like that. And then so therefore, you know, MenCap, who is a charity, clearly actually felt that this might be something that, you know, carries, you know, the landmark status, mm-hmm. because, you know, for a long time, this actually has been the norm that has been considered is, you know, is the right to all mankind, really.
That's in 1942, the U.S. Supreme Court declared that reproduction is a fundamental human right.
Mm.
So it really depends. I'd love to know what's happening in this country. So we have Dato Dr. Amar afterwards, more light on whether or not, you know, how much of it is a human right, really. I mean, they talk about having, you know, bringing up children and things like that as a basic human, having a family as a human right. But not many people talk about reproducing or reproduction as a human right. So that's going to be quite interesting. We're continuing this discussion. We have also caregivers who we'll be speaking to up next as to how they feel. They deal a lot with children with disabilities and what seems to be the scenario here in Malaysia. Do parents actually come forward and ask for their children to be sterilized? Whether or not that works for them or not is what we'll find out. Give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasodhi. It's Friday, of course. Dr. George Lee in the studio with me. We are discussing something very interesting that was reported in the BBC on the 16th of August. It was the case of a man who has learning disabilities who has been now asked to undergo a vasectomy by a court due to a court-sanctioned sterilization for a man. So that's really, really interesting. And Dr. George is here to have us to initiate the debate. Well, help me out, George. I'm very, very emotional about this. Split in two when it comes to the whole issue, really.
That's right. Okay. I mean, you know, why this is a landmark case is because in 1999, actually, you know, the application of the similar situation of sterilization of men came to court and it was refused, and making this really the new ruling for the first time in court, and that has sanctioned a man's sterilization.
Yeah, I think so, the other thing is consent. You know, George, should anyone be allowed or should anyone be able to dictate? Even a person with disability to, as far as consent is concerned.
Well, actually, you know, when it comes to consent, you know, In our medical practice, we actually had been supported by a lot of our, you know, code of conduct. Actually, when it comes to life and death situation, two doctors perhaps can make consent in order to act on the best interest of the patients. However, at any point, we feel that there may be issues that actually will touch on ethics, may be unclear about how we stand in the law. We always ask for the assistance of the court in order to help us to make decisions.
Okay, we have Hajah Ilahi on the line. Hajah Ilahi, how are you today?
Hi, Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Same here. Hajah Ilahi is actually the founder of Tasputra Perkim, who is a place where they look after children with special needs, a lot of severe disabilities, Hajah Ilahi. You know the facts of the case, Hajah, and what did you think of the outcome of the case?
Yes, actually, I do agree with people with disabilities. Once they get into the teenage, explain to them in a simple language, they go for a sterilization. Their partners are going to be the same people with the learning disabilities. It would be quite
distressing, presumably,
let them to carry on with a normal way of life, because they will contribute to have children, and who's going to look after these children?
Mm-hmm.
So it is nice and fair that, of course, with the consent of the families and everything, to send them for this small operation for the men. Yeah.
For the men.
Right. For the men, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because for the women is a little bit more complicated, isn't it?
Absolutely. We're going to touch a little bit about, what it entails and when it comes to procedure and then, things like that. Thank you very much indeed to offer that viewpoint, because so far we had three callers who called in who actually felt that it is a human rights regardless of your mental status. And then clearly you felt that to some degree, these sort of things, if it's done with a lot of consent and then discussions with simple language with involved.
Yes, definitely. They would have to let them know in the simplest of language, because even normal people, that if they are offered to do such a thing, even men after having few children, they'll have a shock.
Is this quite well practiced in Malaysia?
Well, I'm afraid I have a personal experience that my doctor did not allow my husband to go for it.
Did not allow?
They said, oh, it's not necessary, you can control, After we had four children, and they wouldn't allow. The doctor would not allow, bless him, he's still around and he remembers.
Okay, I need to have a strong word with your doctor and also your husband. But that's besides the point. You early on alluded to that, it is the right thing to do, because at the end of the day, somebody needs to look after, the offsprings.
Definitely.
Of the, But how,
definitely.
The thing is, the question I ask you, apart from your husband's kind of refusal, and I think that is probably conspiracy there, but what I wanted to find out is this common practice to actually do vasectomy on learning disability sufferers in Malaysia?
I have not heard it, doctor, but I know normal people do it. I mean, modern people, after they decide for how many children they don't want.
I do it every day. That's right. Well, not for myself, but I do it for patients every day. So
what has been your experience, Hajah Ilahi, with the people you've looked after for many, many years now? They would have grown up. They obviously will have sexual urges. And how do you control that? Yeah, how do you control that?
We've had children here with this kind of problems, and unfortunately, they end up with
unwanted pregnancy.
No. I've not come across that, because they don't allow the child to be exposed to this kind of situation.
They're well supervised.
But a male child, surely they won't come to that kind of, because they are not exposed to that level, you see. But learning disabilities, where they are going around in the society for free, they might come across during the school, office, whatever they do, they might come across people who are the same level as them, and they might come into this problem, you see. I do agree. If I honestly will give my agreement, and I volunteer to teach the parents, go for this.
Well, my being a devil's advocate, I actually will say that what you're agreeing to can actually potentially cause enforced sterilization with people with learning disability, that as a common practice. And then that will actually set us back to the 1960s when, the society will decide that, you cannot look after your children, you don't deserve to be fathers, and then therefore we will tie up the tubes.
Hajah Ilahi,
what do you say to that?
Where are you coming from? What is your main concern?
Hello, are you talking to me?
Yes, are you, what is your main concern, Hajah Ilahi, by, you know, advocating for, you know, boys to be sterilized, boys with learning disabilities?
Well, you see, I'm concerned about the families who are not Muslims, you see, because the Muslim families, they will definitely not allow these kind of things, the child to be exposed to these kind of things. So what he does to get rid of his sexual desires, God, I wouldn't like to know. But, you know, but I have not heard, actually.
Any of such case in Malaysia?
I live here, yes. I'm Malaysian.
Okay. All right. Anything else you'd like to add on, Hajah Ilahi, on the topic?
No, I hope this thing goes nicely and simply. And it needs a lot of understanding. I hope people do.
Yeah, I agree with you. It needs to be handled with extreme care.
Yeah. Counseling, yeah. Things like that.
And if they don't want to do it, well, then you'll have to just, like the normal way they put the child in a kind of a cage. And he's
a cage?
I have seen a few cases. Of course, this was not just learning disability. It was a total retarded child,
yeah.
Where it gets into a certain age, where he's huge and heavy. And, you know, we had one in the center that if he just came to my office and sat down, five people couldn't get him up.
Right.
Surely that's against the law.
It's very rough. So they end up in a cage, unfortunately. They have to partition a certain part of the house where he can't say, "Mommy, I'm hungry." He will go there and hold his mother, and he might put his hand in the middle of the hot oil.
Right.
So they have to put them away from this normal living situation.
Right. Okay.
They'll have to just lock him up somewhere where, you know, only certain times they can get him out.
Right. And would a vasectomy help in a case like that, George?
I'm speechless because, you know, I am heartbroken now to actually hear that, you know, they
confined
have such
a confined space.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we want to introduce as normal life as possible to the sufferers. And at the end of the day, if you are confined and completely excluded from normal society, then I don't see any need for vasectomy because you don't get to see anyone anyway.
Yes. If you're talking about people with just learning disabilities, where they have got small, simple jobs, they go here and there, they mix with the society, they might come to have a girlfriend, you know, that is a bit different to the person who is terribly retarded,
right,
and
okay.
Has to be taken care by the family.
Sure. Okay, got it. Thank you very much, Hajah Ilahi. Thanks for taking
you're
our call.
You're very welcome.
Okay, bye-bye. She has a big, point there.
Yeah.
You mingle, you mix with people, and
that's
then
right.
Chances are, you know. Yeah. We have Sam on the line. Sam, thank you for holding on.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Sam.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, good afternoon.
We can hear you. What would you, your comment on the topic?
Well, just want to give a food for thought.
Yep.
We are talking about sterilization for this guy who has learning disabilities.
Yes.
But now, he has a healthy life, and the child that is going to be born might be healthy. So why do a sterilization? Now, on the other hand, you think of somebody with a HIV and on treatment, they are allowed to have children and their lifespan might end. They are allowed to carry on having a child when they will not be able to care for the child if their lifespan is. Why do we restrict ourselves with somebody with learning disabilities? We have to understand the disease. Generally ill patients like cancer patients and all, how come they are allowed to? So I feel there is a segregation here that is not right and it's not fair. And I totally disagree against sterilization for someone with learning disabilities.
Great point.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sam. Okay. Thank you for sharing your thoughts.
Just a few corrections about Sam's point. I mean, these days and age with antiviral therapy, most HIV sufferers can actually live a normal life, life expectancy. And the other thing that there are ways that medicine can help to prevent HIV being passed on to the next generation.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, but, you know, interesting to
draw the parallelity, you know, between the HIV sufferers and also someone who has got learning disabilities.
That's right. Thank you, Sam. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Sam. And, you know, Lutz has another interesting point in that he says, you know, we're talking about support, right, George? We're talking about how the support, the family has to support the child and, you know, come into play because both parents have a learning disability. But, you know, Lutz is also saying there are people who are socioeconomically challenged who have children. Not just which.
Yes.
And that is an interesting point as well. I mean, we're not saying we're sterilized.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, in the 60s and 70s, there were forced sterilizations on, you know, people, you know, to limit the number of, you know, children they can have, you know, irrespective of your, you know, socioeconomic status. So, you know, that itself is another interesting observation. It's just like, you know, disability can come in a financial form and also in a learning form.
Yes,
so that will be interesting to see.
Okay. We have Christine Wong on the line. She is the president of the Special Children's Society of Ampang. Thank you for taking our call, Christine.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Christine. What were your thoughts on the whole case of enforced sterilization?
For special needs children?
Yes.
Well, if you ask me, I'm very against it.
All right.
I feel that our children have rights, just like normal children.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that everything that we have, all ourselves and our body, is made for a reason, and everything, like our hormones and... hold on a second, I'm so sorry.
She's probably got an emergency at the centre.
It's okay.
But she's excused.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, she made a fantastic point about, you know, this is an, you know, desire, productions, and then, you know, it is a God's gift, really.
It is. It's our, in our nature. Yeah. Carry on, Christine.
Yeah, so I believe it's made in our bodies, it's made for a purpose, and everything is good. So I believe that even if a child has got special needs, we have no right to play God, to remove their ovaries or to sterilize them. And I also believe that if a child is good enough to be a father and he wants to be in a relationship or he wants to get married, I feel that he has every right to.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I am a mother of a special needs child, and I know that my child will never marry, and given the situation, she will not know what to do. So I will rather leave my child innocent.
In a center.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you had parents come up to you and talk to you about the whole idea of sterilization?
Yes.
You have? What has been your response? Same response, and have they gone with it?
Not really. Mostly because our children are so young in our center. Most of it is dealing with periods.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the children, especially the girls, are not able to handle their periods.
Yep.
So their parents actually come up to me and ask whether it's advisable, and I always say no.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe there are other ways to go around it. We should actually teach our child to, we should educate our children how to handle their body processes rather than to stop it completely.
It's almost like an easy way out for some.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I mean, for obviously this degree of disabilities, learning disabilities that the sufferers has, whenever you have these children, what is the oldest age kind of groups that you looked after?
The oldest I have is 38.
38, right? Okay. Obviously, you want to introduce as much normality into their life as possible. And then whenever they have interactions with T and things like that, clearly, you know, the interaction, you know, emotional interaction, sexual interaction may be something that may emerge. How do you kind of like, do you get worried about that? Or do you somehow, how do you take care of that side of, you know, issues?
Okay. The children in our center do fall in love with each other. All right, they are mentally handicapped, but they have feelings for each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they know what to do beyond liking each other.
Okay.
I don't think they know how to go beyond
each other without that further step of intimacy. If you begin to see that, you know, there are natures of intimacy happening, how do you handle that?
So far, I have not.
Right, okay.
Yes. Because they're very young, aren't they, Christine?
No.
It's up to 38.
Even our children who are 38, they're very innocent.
Right.
Because I think if you don't teach them what they don't need to know, I think
you think nature will not find its way. No. You think it's all nurture rather than nature.
You go on the premise of ignorance is bliss, don't you?
Okay.
But does that work though? I mean, because you have sexual urges. How do you not then...
It's all the hormonal,
explain
you know,
that.
Warfare in there.
Yeah, so I have a Down syndrome boy in the center who loves another Down syndrome girl, but all he says is, oh, I love you. You are my wife. But I think he just says it, but he doesn't know the meaning of a husband and wife relationship.
Right.
And there's another Down syndrome boy who likes another disabled girl. And he, to him, is, if I look at you every day in school, that's all. You know, he's already so happy to be able to see her in school.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I don't think they know what to do.
And we'll keep it that way.
Yeah, right, we'll keep it that way.
That's right.
Thank you, Christine, for speaking with us. I'm almost tearing now. Thank you for joining us. We come back after the news on BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture, and it's Mira Sifa. So the Dr. George Lee consultant urologist in the studio with me discussing the whole issue of enforced sterilization based on a case in the UK just a couple of days ago. Interesting conversations, actually.
Yeah, we have both sides of the stories.
Yeah,
so
both caregivers.
And some sit on the fence.
Some sit on the fence, you know, some ignorance is bliss. I don't know. I mean, I don't deal with, you know, children with special needs, so I really wouldn't know how they react or, you know, how they display you know, sexual needs and things like that. But, you know, George, are there non-invasive methods that this can be done to? You can achieve the same sort of outcome without it being so invasive?
One is arguing that this is non-invasive. For those of you who actually, you know, assume we're talking about castration, you can forget it. This is not castration
is
at
not
all.
Castration.
Well, obviously, you know, when you this you know, think about, you know, having the test removed, that is castration. But this is a very simple procedure that actually is a tying or removing one segment of the tube that drains the side whorl. So this is a common procedure. So I'm a little bit heartbroken to hear that the, you know, the first caller's doctor actually discouraged you know, her husband, said they don't need it. I think we passed that era now. Men are very metrosexual. They can take on the, you know, the responsibility of contraceptions. So many may argue that this is virtually non-invasive, because some would say that, you know, for women, it is more invasive, or so men is not invasive. So okay, that may be the argument that someone would put forward.
And we have Dr. Amar Singh. He's president of the National Early Childhood Intervention Council on the line. He's going to share his thoughts with us. Thank you, Dr. Amar, for taking our call.
Yes, hi.
Can you hear us?
Sure, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yeah. Dr. Amar, what are your thoughts on this whole idea of enforced sterilization?
Okay, I think that there should be no enforced sterilization. The issue is whether we're talking here about people with disability. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think there are a couple of issues that we need to consider. First of all, I think that in past, historically, people have sterilized individuals because they worried about a genetic risk and a transmission genetically.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we don't want to go back to, and we don't want to sterilize people for that reason. But I think many parents have come to me over the years because they're concerned that their child or young man, who's especially their girl, who is disabled, that she might be sexually abused or raped,
right,
and then she's going to get pregnant. And for that reason, they've asked me whether we could do a tubal ligation for her. But I think the real issue here is, although they have concerns about the girl getting pregnant, the real issue is, can we provide safety for the child? I think that's more important.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fear here that if we do a tubal ligation, then, and if people find out, then I think she's higher risk of being sexually abused or raped than if she doesn't have the tubal ligation. So I think that that's a very important concern that we always tell parents, and we try to work with them to find better mechanisms of safety for the child.
Do you work more with the women or the girls or the boys?
I work with both. And okay, parents have asked for, you know, sometimes for sterilization for their boys as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a very difficult decision for us as what to do. I was listening in a conversation about a vasectomy, and I agree fully that a vasectomy is a very easy procedure.
Yeah.
And I think today men should go for vasectomy, not ladies for a tubal ligation. I think it's a better option in terms of decision for sterilization.
Right.
Yeah.
Do many parents come forward to you and, you know, get your advice?
That's right. I deal a lot with disabilities, so parents come to see me in the clinic and to see my colleagues. And generally, we don't encourage sterilization. We think of better ways to find safety.
Mm-hmm.
And here again, I'm talking about people who are not planning to get married. These are people with significant disabilities who won't handle the responsibility for marriage. Yeah.
Right.
Clearly, on this, on this particular issue that we're talking about in the UK, is that we have a two learning disability with different degrees of learning disabilities between boys and girls. Actually, has been together. You know, 36-year-old. They have loving relationship. Correct. That what the judge actually passed a judgment was on distress that actually psychologically harm. You know, that were imposed on the boy. So, what's your thought about this particular case? There's no safety issue. There's loving issues.
I think there's a very wise judgment they made in the UK, and you can see the response to it also from many organizations. They've supported it. They don't want to go back to a compulsory environment, but here they feel that this is in the best interest of the young man. Mm-hmm. And also they've taken his opinion into account that he himself is not prepared to have any children and doesn't want any children. I think there's one very important equation here. If the person himself is able to make a decision despite the disability, I think we must respect that decision as our primary decision making.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Of course, Dr. Amar, there's also the argument of human rights, right? To force someone to remove perfectly functioning organs is basically an abuse of their human rights. When people, you know, throw you questions like that, how do you respond?
Actually, the only reason they ask me to remove organs would be because they can't cope with the menses. Mm-hmm. So a lot of parents have asked me, can we do a hysterectomy, because they can't cope with the child's menses.
Does that happen often?
Very often. That is more common than actually the sterilization issue.
Right.
They can't cope because it's children who would take out the sanitary pad, put the blood on the walls, on their faces.
Mm.
So it's a very messy issue for them. So usually what we do is we try and get them better quality of, prevention of menses. So we usually use something called a Depo Provera. It's a injection under the skin, which lasts for many months, which completely blocks off their menses. And parents are quite happy with that. If we solve that, then actually we don't talk at all about actually removing organs. And I fully agree with you. I don't really like to remove organs from anyone.
Do you need court judgment for doing something like that?
No, I think because most of these children are not able to make decisions, even as adults. So usually if parents say they can't cope with handling their menses, so we offer them hormonal therapy, which is long-lasting. Because taking tablets every day is not so reliable as having a hormonal implant.
Right. You know, just now we had Christine Wong, who spoke about how, you know, she has two Down syndrome children who say they love each other.
Yes.
But, they don't go on to do anything further than, just saying those words or, being a little affectionate. But is there a need for better support programs for sex education and family planning and parenting skills for the disability sector in Malaysia?
I think you don't need it just for the disabled, you need it for the able as well. I do a lot of work in schools, and children ask lots of questions, but teachers not prepared to answer because, there's a fear that, it's a taboo, but also a fear that they're not supposed to teach so much sex education.
Mm-hmm.
I think definitely our young public are not informed. And for disability especially, there's a very high rate of people taking advantage of them or doing something that they don't have sufficient knowledge about what the consequences of their actions are.
Yeah.
So definitely I think it should be mandatory that every disabled child gets some degree of sex education, especially with view to sex protection and with view to contraception. I think both are equally important.
Okay, you've been very much involved in the National Early Childhood Intervention Council. What has been initiated in this regard at the council?
I think most of us are actually involved in training. Most of us run workshops. I have a program and I run workshops where we offer training to carers of people who are disabled, especially centres and NGOs.
Mm-hmm.
So we offer them a training program how to broach the subject. Many people in our country are not just taboo, but they're shy about it.
Yeah.
And we teach them, give them tools, give them suggestions in different languages how to approach this issue with young adults and teenagers.
Earlier on, we had a caller who actually say that, it is obviously human rights with able or disabled bodies, to procreate. And then something like this actually is breach of human rights and we shouldn't play God. That's one kind of like a statement that's made. And then also the MenCat spokeswoman for this particular case actually said that enforced sterilizations of people with learning disability has been common practice in the UK in 1960s. And clearly, we don't want to go back to those days. What do you say about this landmark case? Will it affect the future? Where do we stand as far as future is concerned?
In Malaysia.
In Malaysia and also in the UK, presumably.
Yeah, I think that forced sterilization is practiced in many countries in the past, and thank God that it's been stopped. I think this event in UK is not going to go back to that. I look to UK a lot because I think they're one of the most sensible countries in making good decisions. But I think the beauty there, they have a lot of support. The social services are excellent. Social workers would spend a lot of time discussing this before it comes to the court. I think we need to grow that here. We have a very different cultural and religious mix here, and I don't think any of us can make a decision for the entire Malaysian population. But I think what we really need to grow is the quality of our social services, our welfare department, more social workers that can support families to make good informed decisions, and also support young adults and teenagers with disabilities. So I think we don't have a good infrastructure right now.
Do you often feel you're fighting a losing battle?
That's a leading question. The battle is lost already.
Oh, no.
No, I don't think we're really growing in a country. I think we like to think that we're moving towards a developed country, but we haven't invested in our social services, mm-hmm. in a support system. I'm not talking about a welfare state. I'm just talking about good services for people with disability.
Yeah. It was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for talking to us. That was Dr. Amar Singh, President of the National Early Childhood Intervention Council, sharing his thoughts with us. We don't have much time left. George, you want to round up?
Well, actually, you know, like myself, in the very, very beginning, you know, you said to me that you're feeling a bit somber, you're feeling a bit heartbroken. Because
torn.
You know, this was a case that actually, on one hand, you agree that this might be something done to protect. On the other hand, this is something that is done inevitably harming the sufferer, the stakeholders, and everything. I think at the end of the day, you know, one day you accuse me of being too positive in everything. I really think that, you know, one thing that is really good out of our conversation here is that we get the conversation started, because at the end of the day, there are so many issues that is taboo. You know, contraception is taboo, sex education is taboo, looking after the learning disability, population is taboo. However, whenever we discuss this and solve the problems, and then perhaps we can all push forward in order to enhance our community responsibility towards the less fortunate.
Okay, just before we end, I had a clip here. I'm going to play it. It's from a story from Australia, Amanda and her story.
I love being a mum, seeing the milestones of my kids.
They bring you a lot of joy, don't they?
Bring me joy.
Be good company.
Good company. No, I wouldn't have it any differently than what I've got it now.
Amanda was in foster care with myself, and so she refers to me as her godmother, and Pauline is her other godmother, her godmothers. And so Amanda grew up with us throughout her childhood. And I suppose when people sort of say, oh, what do? We really do what any involved hands-on grandparents are doing, grandmothers are doing. And intellectual disability has nothing to do with being able to love. If anything, these girls are so loved.
It doesn't affect him. It doesn't affect my parenting. Lily's easygoing, so goes with the flow, and Beth is pushes your buttons.
Does she push your buttons?
Well, anyone's buttons.
Does that make life difficult at times?
No, not really, because I try to understand what they want. No, cannot.
There you go. Success story.
Heartwarming.
Amanda with a disability.
Very heartwarming.
Successful mum, you know, of two.
Oh, you know, this is absolutely right. Yeah. You know, everyone has the ability to love.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Dr. George Lee, for joining me today.
Very drama.
On the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.